We had a square between Sagittarius and Pisces. And here we have a sextile, the first sextile, maybe the only sextile between Scorpio and Capricorn. A sextile, a harmonious aspect, promoting the cooperation of the tendencies. And certainly, we look at the similarities of the three-headed dog and Capricorn, the three types of heads of the Hydra in Scorpio, the M, the three is there. The kneeling is there. The will is there, first ray. Mars is exalted in Capricorn and the main ruler of Scorpio, and Capricorn rules the underworld, ruled by Pluto, which rules Scorpio. Many connections between these signs meant to catapult the man into the hierarchical life. Is there a Sirian connection? Well, there certainly is with Scorpio. With Capricorn, it has yet to be established. Anyway, a sextile is at work, and this is a harmonious blending of the two qualities. Obviously, we could really produce a monster of selfishness if we combined the earthbound soul and unity of selfishness in Scorpio. This would be a dense man, hardened and dedicated in a one-pointed manner to all that is lowest in his desire nature. Well, that may be the way it begins. In a sense, you know, it didn't really begin that way. We're told that the newly individualized Lemurian was very aware of his solar angel. And there was a possibility, I think, that the laws given by the solar angels could have been adopted. And perhaps much of the descent into ignorance, which characterized certain parts of the Lemurian Atlantean field, experience, and even parts of the Aryan experience, could have been avoided if the laws had been upheld. Later we will have the necessary historical perspective to see whether we agree that that was really the case. Okay, but for now, let's get ready to go on to Section D, where we will finish with Aquarius and Pisces in this very important tabulation. As I go through the tabulation, I realize, well, there's so much to be said, so much that I'm leaving out. But, you know, in the Hall of Wisdom, all of these factors in the third column could be combined to look at the qualities which during the last 12 incarnations, if they are at all sequential, as is sometimes implied, have to be expressed. One would become, you know, in the Hall of Wisdom, the conqueror of death, the server of all men. One would become the savior. One would become the guardian of the gate. One would display higher unity. One would display divine love and understanding. One would have the expression of the Christ light, the Christ energy. One would realize the one self. One would see the whole as one. One would serve the one. One would enter into the state of illumined living. One would recognize and work with the plan. What I've just done is I've run backwards through the column, through the third column, selecting some of the epitomes which are given there to describe the life of the disciple initiate in these signs. And as we're working through those final petals in the Hall of Wisdom, we would demonstrate, depending on the astrology of our particular incarnation, those high virtues. One can look at one's own major astrology and see whether one is now demonstrating these virtues. For instance, if I have Cancer rising in the Sun in Aries, those are two important signs, I would ask myself, am I recognizing the plan and working with the will? Well, to an extent. Do I recognize the whole as one? Is the whole seen as one? Well, to an extent. One has to judge one's achievements according to this final, this final column, because the achievements set forth here are so beautiful, so inspiring, great attractions for us, and we can try to work in such a way that we can truly achieve these things in some measure in our present life. So this is a very orienting tabulation, very helpful, helping us understand these things and aim towards high objectives, which we want to become real expressions in our life. Well, I better stop talking, otherwise number three is going to go on too long. We're going to get into Esoteric Astrology Adventure Point D. When I come back, I'll do that. Okay, now we are in a position to begin Esoteric Astrology Adventure, 98D, page 333. We have two more signs to deal with when considering how human beings at different stages of evolution receive these energies and what it means to them. It always means something different depending upon the condition of the form. Aquarius. All things to all men, and the burden of the self, the undeveloped man. The developed man, dedication to the soul. Interesting here, this is the advanced man. The burden of humanity, and this already seems as if it should be fitting not only for the advanced man, but for the human being who is already the disciple. It seems that that is what we should have here. Notice that in the second column, some of the statements made concern the advanced mental life and the developed personality. Others are definitely spiritual. So, if we go up a little, sensitivity to soul of Pisces, spiritual, dedication to soul, spiritual, the one who crosses the water, yes, spiritual, but also relevant to the advanced man who can control his life. One-pointedness, not necessarily spiritual, conflict with duality, both not spiritual and yet spiritual, the weighing of the opposites, tending towards spiritual, the creative force, tending towards spiritual, the higher self, definitely spiritual, the unit awakens to that which is around. Perhaps it simply may indicate the growing sensitivity of the advanced man. The orientation of I serve my brother, this is spiritual. Aspiration, tending towards spiritual and the light of love, and directed personality effort, not necessarily spiritual. So all of these are not necessarily equal in the degree to which they represent the disciple or the initiate. But dedication to the soul is definitely that which the disciple experiences, and not just the advanced intellectual man. The burden of humanity and the server of all men, definitely, since it's all human beings, the burden of the world helping Atlas carry his burden. This definitely relates to the disciple and even more to the initiate. What is it about this fluid sign, always in motion, which makes it difficult to achieve at first a center of identity? So there is something here that we might call as you desire me. I can be whatever you would like to see me be. I don't have the kind of stable center which allows me to define my identity in a particular and recognizable way so that it does not vary in the presence of everybody. I think it is a lower, it is universality on a lower turn of the spiral. Eventually the person will realize himself to be all others and active, the worker within every unit of life. I am the worker in the work, the one that is. But at first there is this difficulty of identifying with one's own center and a shaping of oneself according to the way that others may reinforce oneself. As you desire me. Aquarius is always carrying a burden. The burden of the self exists when it is the attention is given to one's own personality. One is always tending to the service of the self. Desire in form is ruler. That's something I should have said, that when it comes to the first column of the undeveloped man, the earlier mantram for each one of these signs is relevant. So there is the loss of center, there is eccentricity perhaps, and mutability of identity. Perhaps some of us who have the moon in Aquarius can understand that. Mutability of identity and defining oneself according to circumstance and according to the presence of others, but always interested in advancing oneself within the context of others, and burdened by that type of perception, unable really to understand the group. Now, we have as rulers Uranus, Jupiter, and the Moon, veiling all three aspects of the personality. Here we have Uranus, it must be an early form of Uranus, contributing to eccentricity. By that I mean to a difficulty in defining one's central nature. There is the tendency for the early Aquarian to define himself or herself by the nature of the group. This is not group consciousness, it's a form of self-definition which occurs when there is mass consciousness, really. And that which we attend to, we have to carry. If we attend overly much to our own desires in form, it is, although we may not realize it, a burden which prevents our consciousness from expanding, prevents us from realizing the true nature of the group. If we are constantly seeking for ways to turn the many energies towards ourselves in service, then we are burdened by the limitation of our perception and by our innate selfishness, really. We have a great variety of contacts, perhaps, under Aquarius, but we turn them all towards our own self as a center, even though we do not distinctively define that self, even though there is mutability of identity in that self. I sometimes think of the idea of the shower of all good things, you know, as if pouring forth from divinity. The advanced Aquarian turns this shower-like flow upon others and pours forth great benefit to others. But the early Aquarian seeks to direct those benefits to himself, and thereby limits his understanding of the wider picture. DK talks about it's neither the advanced nor the undeveloped Aquarian, but how certain Aquarians tend to invest all of their energies within the group of which they find themselves to be a part, and limit themselves in that way, although it is perhaps a good form of limitation, that type of loyalty to the group, even though the group may not yet be a spiritual group. Here, under Jupiter, for the advanced man, and really for a man who is advancing quite far spiritually, we have dedication to the soul. Now, under Libra, we had devotion and aspiration towards the higher of the pairs of opposites, and here there is the factor of dedication, which has a strong mental component to it. It's not just emotional. There is a higher vision under Jupiter, the esoteric ruler, which will also branch over into the level of disciple and initiate. But apparently he has come in here for the advanced Aquarian. There will always be this weight lifting going on in Aquarius, and a necessary decentralization has occurred, so one begins to think in group terms and realize that one is not only carrying oneself. Oneself must be made light enough so it doesn't need attentive carrying. One is carrying the condition of humanity, and that is very disciplic. It's the place at which the advanced man and the aspirant disciple begin to merge. What is my responsibility? Saturn, in a way, does rule Aquarius. What is my responsibility to the rest of humanity? Saturn represents a weight. And we realize the weight of the substance of humanity and how it holds it down from realization and deeper understanding. The burden of humanity, I suppose, Mother Teresa is not an Aquarian, per se. She has strong Virgo and Sagittarius, very strong Pluto. Interesting chart, but there's an example of someone who is carrying a great burden. The burden of the people for whom she has taken responsibility, and really she's gone over into that realm of saviorship, so it seems. How many of us reach out into humanity, realizing the weight that is there, and attempt in our own quarter to lift some of that weight so it does not hold down human consciousness and human potential. But we do our uplifting share when faced with the quite oppressive weight of humanity. This is Jupiter. Jupiter is one of the great gaseous giants, and it's always associated with lightness somehow. Even though some Jupiterian people reveal a certain gravitas, a certain pomp and ceremony, but yet there's another side of Jupiter which is always uplifting and encouraging. And here, this is the lifting of people into their soul potential in group form. I would say that Jupiter continues in its power over into the disciple and initiate column. And then we find that we do not discriminate between human beings in terms of their worthiness of service. We think of the one humanity, and under Jupiter we include them all. And our purpose under the moon as the hierarchical ruler is to redeem all aspects of the human personality and to expose them to the light which shines on Earth across the sea. These are cleansing rays, enlightening rays, uplifting rays. We look out and we see the entire human race. We realize that all our souls, regardless of their personality expression and the desirability or undesirability of that personality expression, all are worthy of being served because there is simply one being here, humanity, worthy of service. It's a very inclusive position, and because of that it's Jupiterian, and every aspect of the human being is considered a fair objective for service and upliftment. So, you know, it's not so personal. Who are you helping? Well, I'm just helping this small group of people. It is a broadcasting of the serving radiation to everyone on the planet. We begin to realize ecologically that there are many kingdoms of nature. And if we help humanity, we're also helping the animal kingdom, the plant kingdom, even the regeneration of the mineral kingdom. We're serving the fifth kingdom of nature in its purposes. We are, in a sense, real members of the hierarchy, initiates, carrying the planetary weight as it demonstrates in a number of different kingdoms. We are intent on improvement. See Virgo and Aquarius, closely related as we saw earlier through that quincunx. Carry the possibility of improving conditions. In this sense, Uranus applies at all levels as a major ruler of Aquarius. Uranus is one of the veiled planets. The Aquarian tends to have a lot of fifth ray and is very mental. The personality of humanity during the Aquarian age will be the fifth ray. It was the third ray during the Piscean age. The intuitive mind, the fourth ray, will be the mental nature of humanity. And many issues will be solved on the mental plane. But this type of Aquarian has a planetarized consciousness and does not think only in terms of humanity, but ecologically of humanity in relation to all the other kingdoms, all the other kingdoms in relation to humanity and in relation to the planet as a whole. Global responsibility comes in here with Aquarius, and we will find new disciples emerging and reaching heights of service in this sign because they have a global responsibility in their consciousness. This will lead towards the cleansing, upliftment, irradiation of the three lunar vehicles, towards their etherealization. It's the etherealization of the three vehicles and the fourth elemental, the personality. And it is a universal perspective. To be all things to all men courts the approval of others, a type of identification that says, perhaps without justification, I'm just like you. we're all in this together, and I'm like you, and I'm like you, and I'm like you. But one is not defining what one really is. So there's a superficial sense of selfhood in the person who tries to do everything and who tries to be all things to all people. This is the carrying the burden of a uncertain self, and a self that wants to expand, of course, Jupiter applies. A self that wants to be free of being just one thing. So Uranus applies. Uranus can break through limitation, but there's the sense of seeking what will later become identification, which is to identify with every center. But of course, at first it's superficial because one is, in a way, pretending to have the qualities that others desire. So Uranus is active there, but Uranus is also active as the service of all men. The dedication to the soul is to realize the one family of humanity as one soul, and to realize people more as soul than as personality, and to realize what kind of improvement may be necessary, and to attempt to lift human beings towards the potential improvement. In some ways, Saturn can be involved here too. There's a lot of responsibility taken, and Saturn rules the first decanate of Aquarius. All things to all men. Dedication to the soul, realizing people in their soul nature and humanity in its soul nature, and trying to lift the heaviness of the elemental life through the new types of radiatory energy into a condition of soul responsiveness, and then finally the ability to include all human beings, irrespective of who they may be personally. A rather impersonal attitude, Uranus gives this, and Aquarius gives this in general, but it means carrying a still larger burden because the upliftment of all of nature towards supernature is involved. The keynote, Aquarius releases Virgo from her load. We found earlier, let's go there, it's also the quincunx relation, that Virgo hides the light which irradiates the world in Aquarius. It's the Christ light and the universalization of the Christ light. But now Aquarius is helping to release this inner man of God that is coming to birth in Virgo, and the Jupiterian Uranian aspect of Aquarius helps with this release. The load is the second aspect of divinity, which is given birth by Virgo, nurtured through the dark time when it has not yet emerged from the third aspect of divinity. And Aquarius makes it possible to put the emerging Christ energy to best use by distributing it wisely through a form of universal love. It takes a while before this can happen, and the Christ has to be raised into full manhood, but then that Christ consciousness is not just for the few. It is to be widely distributed for the many. And that's what Aquarius is able to do. So there's a certain freedom in Aquarius, and it is the sign of liberation on the fixed cross. And the various burdens that are carried so well that they are no longer burdens. They become second nature. It happened that way in the Gemini labor, where Hercules found Atlas struggling with the burden of the world and helped relieve him of that burden, and then the burden rolled off of both of them. And they were able to go about more freely their spiritual task. there does come a time when we are so used to lifting burdens that they no longer seem like burdens. So the Christ is emerging. The Christ has to be tested in everyone. The Christ has to triumph. The Christ has to achieve triumph in Scorpio and full power in Capricorn, and then be made widely available for one and all in Aquarius. Aquarius releases Virgo from her load. I suppose when people have both of these signs, some of these mantrums may have focal applicability to them. So, all things to all men, the Hall of Ignorance, dedication to the soul, the later part of the Hall of Learning, the later part of the fifth petal, dedication to the higher power, and the sacrifice petals and beyond, the server of all men, who has the strength to recognize the interdependency of many forms of life and to work towards the improvement of these forms of life and the improvement of the relationships between them so that they reinforce each other and are no longer frictional and retarding upon each other. Finally, the color here is turquoise. Green for Capricorn, turquoise for Aquarius. The turquoise is a combination of the green and the blue, and so was Virgo, at least in my estimation. A combination of attention to form and personality, which is the green, and attention to soul, at least in this solar system, when Virgo carries the second and sixth ray. So a combination of blue and green and blue. And interestingly enough, these two signs, which have such materiality about them, are also related to the Christ consciousness and its use for the improvement of forms that are being used by those who are not yet free of those forms. Well, definitely, the Tibetan does give turquoise for the color of Aquarius. He doesn't do that. He gives yellow for Virgo, but I'd like to speak of our blue-green planet, which is Mother Earth and is related, I think, to Virgo, the sign, the foremost sign of motherhood, and is an Earth sign, hence Mother Earth, and suggest that the combination of the green and the blue will associate the color blue-green, green-blue, with the sign Virgo. The color language has much development ahead of itself. The exactitude of the fifth ray has to be brought into it, and exact frequencies and their effect have to be studied. It's not just a question of subjectively seeing a color and liking it or disliking it or using it or not using it. There is an exactitude here to be sought, just as there is an exactitude to be sought in the tones and pitches of the sounds of nature, the sounds of the various planes and subplanes, all an exact science requiring the union of the fourth and fifth ray. And when you think about it, we're in a seventh ray age, where the manifestational potencies of these notes and colors will be developed, and we're in an age when humanity will have a fifth ray personality and a fourth ray mind. The combination of the fifth and the fourth ray will lead inevitably to the study, understanding, and application of the so-called spiritual numerals. The five and four together are unique in combining quantity and quality. In a way, quantity is quality, and quality is quantity. We have to find the frequency correlations for every quality. We have to find the quality correlations for every frequency. Now, with regard to lavender, Pisces, a light shade of violet, having about it some of the red color. Adding red to blue, we get purple or violet. And it is legitimate also to think in terms of the pigments and not only in terms of light. We have, for the undeveloped man, responsiveness to the environment, the medium. Well, Jupiter is the ruler here. Mars, generically, is the ruler. The moon, in a way, generically, is the ruler of this early instinctual undeveloped phase. It's sometimes said that, you know, there were only 8 signs of the zodiac or 10, or in any case, Aquarius and Pisces were left out. But I think it's that represented an inability to respond to those energies, and especially to the higher aspects of those energies. Repeatedly in Pisces, we have the evolutionary mantra, go forth into matter. I don't think we can assume that the sign was ever inactive, because the fish going forth into the material ocean was occurring constantly, and the very first individual incarnation is associated by the Tibetan with Pisces, whereas the group incarnation of humanity is associated with Cancer. The rulership of Neptune is found in both, though in a special way, in Pisces, and Neptune is the matter, Neptune is the water into which we go forth. Neptune is also the sensitivity of this perhaps most sensitive of all the signs. So at first we have Jupiter as ruler, but Neptune pervasive. And then sensitivity to soul. It's a bit different from dedication to soul, because there is a firm mental decision, which also enlists the personality aspiration involved in dedication. But sensitivity is a general boundarylessness in which the membrane separating the individual from the environment is very attenuated. And so many things can get through, but eventually it's not just the irrational levels of the astral plane which get through, but actually the higher mental plane reaches, and the impressions upon the astral body are changed. So here is the mediator, or the one who translates, in a way, that which comes from the soul into the terms of the personality. Pluto is here, but I don't think we can correlate Pluto with sensitivity to soul. It's more that which eliminates the obstructions to sensitivity. Sensitivity is pretty much a lunar, or more exactly, a Neptunian virtue. So the one who stands between two worlds and can faithfully transmit the information from one world to another. Then we come to Pluto's rulership again, or the disciple and initiate. And we have, as in the case of the Dalai Lama, Saturn in relation to Pisces, spiritual responsibility, heavy burdens, strong duties requiring selflessness, self-effacement, the realization that things, well, karma must be dealt with, and especially humanity's karma, and the willingness to undertake some share of humanity's karma. We could ask ourselves here again, what share of humanity's karma have I really undertaken? Here we have a climaxing role, not simply the server of all men, but the savior within humanity, the savior of all men, the savior of the planet, depending upon one's status of saviorship. Savior puts every one else first, and his own individual needs a distance second. He must maintain his instrument, of course, otherwise he cannot help others, and that's where many Pisceans go astray, as they tend to use their sensitivity in ways in which it should not be used. You know, drugs, alcohol, art, which can be good, of course, unless one forgets everything for it, the sex impulse and so forth, escape, in other words. The medium has no great sense of center. The medium, in a way, is an empty house and gives up to different types of obsession. There are different entities which can take over the empty house. If the entities are of a high caliber, then we have intelligent mediumship with which one can cooperate and which is of benefit to humanity. But if there is the low type of entity that obsesses or comes in or possesses, it can be a danger. And the person is compromised by having provided that empty shell, that empty house. So responsiveness is good unless it overwhelms. Now the factor of overwhelm is the Jupiter-Neptune factor. I think tidal waves, in a way, or tsunamis are a combination of Jupiter and Neptune, maybe with Martian force. There is a engulfing quality to Jupiter and Neptune together. So if one is too responsive, all of one's capacities to receive and utilize the energies are compromised. The medium is not doing much to really advance his or her development. The medium is having a degree of faith that whatever he or she contacts and whatever comes in is of value, but Pisces so often lacks discrimination. And we have to decide which aspects of environment we want to tune in on and be responsive to. There are certain levels of the astral plane that we are meant to keep out of our consciousness. They are low levels, the sixth and seventh level, which are strongly emotional and also which have precipitations in them which are hellish with respect to the thinking that goes on in the normal religions. The medium can bring those things in too. There has to be a ceiling of the degree of responsiveness. And of course, as intelligence grows on the mutable cross and as the will grows, because it's in a pretty weak condition in Pisces initially, even though maybe very strong finally, there will be a selectivity rather than an embracing of all possible influences. Sensitivity to soul, Pluto is involved, but you know, Jupiter continues and Neptune continues and Pluto eliminates the obstacles found in our aura which prevent such sensitivity, and so we always will, as the mediators, stand between two worlds, the world which is obvious and the world which has to be brought through and translated for the welfare of others. We reach another Pluto stage. We are killing out aspects of the self which prevent us from accepting the responsibility which we recognize as ours. Nothing is left within a scoured aura that will prevent us from upholding our burden and facing our redemptive task with full responsibility. And here we have that highest of all human forms, largely a second-ray function, the Savior, putting everyone else first, in total self-effacement, to which Pluto does contribute, and Neptune helps, in a pervasive sense, to wipe away the sense of ego, which would prevent us from becoming the selfless savior of the race. So we see a specific work that has to be done if the units concerned are to be lifted towards their potential. We undertake this piece of Saturnian work, and we do it until there is no more need for it to be done because it is accomplished. We have put our own needs a very distant second to the area of human life that we seek to salvage, save, redeem. All ego in the conventional sense is banished here because one is the plan. One is more than the plan. One is the purpose. I am the light of the world. I am the love of the world. I am the power of the world. What does it tell us? Pisces takes from all the signs. That non-discriminate inclusiveness of the Jupiterian Pisces, absorbing, as the second ray does, all the energies and synthesizing them, bringing them into a fluid, intuitive synthesis so that each may be used and each aspects others, other of the signs, in a beneficent and helpful manner. There's so much vulnerability at first in the sign Pisces. You know, you're always looking for the weak link, where it may exist, where the chain may break, where personal weakness may prevent the task from being completed. But the strong Pisces is quite different and is determined upon self-sacrifice, upon vulnerability, upon an openness to reality. And so there is a beneficent synthesis which Pisces is able to make as such a great reflector of other energy factors. In a negative sense, DK talks about the negative Piscean personality of Germany, which took in and reflected the wrong types of energy under the sway of a very thick glamour. So we have basically Jupiter, Pluto, Pluto as the rulers, putting to death all obstacles, putting to death under Pluto all factors which hold the consciousness in darkness and which are responsible for the death of consciousness. Later DK will discuss the true meaning of death and the way of putting death to death. This will be in the sixth of the formulas in discipleship in the New Age. So Jupiter, Pluto, Pluto with Neptune pervasive, and somewhat like Gemini, standing in a midway position between two opposites and being a faithful, translucent, transparent conduit, an experiential conduit. A being who has experienced so much of the high and the low, and is therefore fit to stand at the center and bring through the higher energy as a mediator. And of course, the Savior is bringing through still higher energies which are needed to cleanse and redeem and uplift and reestablish the value of the unit who is in need of salvation. Well, these should be read over, down every column and across, so we see what the liabilities of the unresponsive man are, or should we say the undeveloped man, over responsiveness in this particular case, over diversification in the Aquarian case, and loss of center, excessive concreteness in the Capricornian case, and inability to see subtlety, using oneself as the developmental target in the Sagittarian case, finding the many ways that desire can be fulfilled, the unification of negativity leading to monstrous response in the case of Scorpio, lost in the lower type of amalgamation or love, human love, in the case of Libra, always wanting to unite with the opposite, but understanding the opposite in animal terms, stuck within the processes of matter, the mother, and finding escape difficult in the Virgo column for the undeveloped man, being egoistic or egotistical, being a self which is not revealing one's true individuated nature or individualized nature, is in obscurity and the radiance, uplifting radiance, cannot get through. Isolation and blindness in the case of Cancer. Constant instability, and in the midst of that instability, always looking for one's own advantage for Gemini. The strong desire for the things of Earth, which the light of Earth reveals, and in Aries, the general misuse and non-directedness of energy, and subject to irrational, instinctual reactions, which always will serve the lower objectives and will not promote higher consciousness. These are ways of looking at the first column for the undeveloped man, for the advanced man who is moving towards aspirational work upon the path of probation and moving towards discipleship. We can finally get those energies together and direct them towards at least personal ends under the impulse of focused desire in Aries. We aspire towards a greater light than the light of the earth. The highest form of aspirational idealism is found in Taurus, so we're lifting our sights in Taurus and aspire towards union in the field of love. That's quite disciplic in a way. The advanced man begins to recognize his brother as of value and has the skill and the flexibility to serve that brother. This will occur after the first reversal of the wheel, the first intended reversal, which is going to occur in the fifth petal. Growing sensitivity and inclusiveness for the Cancerian advanced type, not just stuck in splendid isolation, constantly caring for its own almost integrated nature, but a sensitivity to that which must be included within the environment, that which must be cared for. With the advanced man, the higher self, the higher of the pairs of opposites, begins to be revealed in Leo and consulted for the energy that comes forth in Revelation. For the advanced man in Virgo, the creative force, under the impulse of soul ideation, is brought forward, and one must protect those creations which are externalizing upon our planet magically. One cherishes that which oneself as a soul seeks to create. In the white magical process, creativity is occurring. Will the personality seize upon the ideas that the soul wants to see expressed? And if so, can the soul in incarnation protect those ideas and ideals? With Libra, we've moved away from fiery passion and we're beginning to... Let's see how this would go. We're weighing the value of personality and soul, and we're developing a devotion towards something other than animal human love, a devotion towards our higher self, which we will begin to marry as balance is attained in the, strictly speaking, discipleship and initiatory stage. With Scorpio, there will be a conflict between the dualities, and one will attempt to throw the power of one's decision in the direction of the higher one of the dualities. One fights on behalf of the soul, but one needs a clarified consciousness to do so. And in Sagittarius, for the advanced man, we have a one-pointed directed approach to goals which are other than the satisfaction of the individual personal self. A wider picture has appeared, and the one-pointed disciple is attempting to work in relation to some forms of achievement which are not simply the achievement of satisfied desire of a self-centered person. With Capricorn, the advanced man learns effectiveness, crossing the water which is so often, because of its emotional nature, inhibitory of that which is to be accomplished. One learns through intelligent adaptation and is not submerged in the glamours because one has sufficient Saturnian detachment. Then for the advanced man, here in Aquarius, the advanced man tending on discipleship, there's a recognition of the one soul of humanity, the one mind of humanity, and a dedication to that soul mind, the sense that we are doing something together, a close identification with humanity, and thus an experience of its burdens. And then, the server of all men, well, that's another story. We're still in column two. The soul has many revelations, but we don't hear them. We don't hear the still small voice. We don't feel its touch. We don't see the visions it presents. But if we're sensitive enough to this inner realm under the Piscean Neptune influence, we will see and hear and touch that which comes from the soul, and then can be the one who presents that which is seen and felt, touched, heard to humanity as a whole, mediating between a hidden world, hidden from the insensitive, and that world which is very limited because of its sensory sensory limitations. And then we would go into the third column where the true soul destiny for the disciple and initiate are to be found. The powerful will of Aries, recognizing and working with the plan, illumined living with the fourth ray, art of living, flourishing, keeping all things in balance and seeing that all forms are essentially light forms and can be reduced to light and liberated into light, as the formula E equals MC squared tells us. Vulcan is very much a planet which liberates light in the mineral kingdom. Finally, in Gemini, we establish right relations with all things and with all beings and kingdoms, and we realize they are included within the One, and it is really the One that we serve, as we serve any particular unit within the One. For Cancer, there is a wholeness that is perceived, and that wholeness continues to expand. It works under Neptune, and it works under the planet of exaltation, Jupiter, always embracing more, and yet feeling intimately related to all that is included in this greater embrace. So there's nothing in the far-flung universe which one does not identify as an externalization of oneself. When it comes to Leo, the type of self appreciated is the one and only self, of which all selves are an integral part. And one loses one's sense of a proprietary center and shares all centers within cosmos as if they were one's own, and indeed they are. When it comes to Virgo, under Jupiter, the Christ activity has emerged in a large way. The light of the world has emerged, and this emergent Christ can go about its further development and can stimulate the growth of the Christ in others through the mediations of Virgo and also through Aquarius, which allows for the Christ principle to irradiate the world. When it comes to Libra in the advanced column of the disciple and the soul, whatever the opposites may be, whether it's soul and personality or spirit and soul-infused personality, a midway position, a balanced position which can take advantage of both of these centers is established. And one relates to all other things, not in the heat of unbalanced fiery passion, fire by friction, but one relates through solar fire and even through electric fire, which, when it is applied, shows the oneness of all things apparently related to each other. In Scorpio, from the highest point of view, a triple emerging or triple merging in unity is achieved, and spirit, soul, and body are all experienced together. And the person has become the triumphant disciple and is on his way into initiatic life. Under Sagittarius, there's the power to see the goal, to see the distant possibilities and potentials, and to direct others with assurance towards that vista and towards their potentials. So one can allow others to pass further on the path through keen judgment. Capricorn has great willpower and conquers eventually the need to reincarnate. At the fourth degree, Capricorn is active at all the five initiations, we are told, though it is particularly identified with the third. And there is in this light sublime the conquest of negative consciousness, a consciousness which has been submerged, which has somehow been buried and rendered obscure. So consciousness is no longer dead when it attains the vision, the panoramic vision of the mountaintop. It is the will that conquers death. It's an aspect of first-ray will related to the third aspect, which Capricorn transmits, the third ray, and also the seventh ray, part of the third aspect. So that third aspect is no longer allowed to be a veil or a blanket upon consciousness. There's a great clarification in the light of Venus, in the light sublime, to which the subjective sun is added. When it comes to Aquarius, all human beings are considered worthy of service because they are seen as souls. One is dedicated to the soul in others and to the soul in all. And this dedication brings forward the possibility of serving the all of them, and accepting the burden of the entire planet. One becomes a planetary server and is interested in the redemption of the planet through specific methods, skillful methods of intelligent service. And finally, just as the hierarchy does, a great spiritual responsibility is accepted. It will lead to much self-effacement. It will lead to being a person for others, always putting the others first. Ego needs are no longer considered. The ego is dissolved, destroyed under Pluto and dissolved under Neptune. And one is so identified with the condition of others that one accepts spiritual responsibility for their welfare. And one becomes the true savior. And the great synthesis occurs in Pisces, which takes from all the signs and synthesizes them. So in a way, all the many lights of the zodiac are seen as one light, and all the many energies are actually one zodiacal energy emanating from the heart and the head center of the one about whom naught may be said. Well, these are deep matters, and it would be really nice to be able to capture them in a definitive manner. But such is not possible at this time. We just have to think of things in relation to each other. This relational thinking is what I hope emerges to a degree from this aspect of the commentaries. There are many factors within our contents of consciousness. They are unrelated in a significant way, in a way which really reflects their archetypal relation. Mercury is relation, but Uranus shows the archetype and the relations that are realized or created here below have to be of such a nature that they actually do reflect the archetype. This is the task both of Mercury and of Uranus together. So we have worked through this important tabulation, one to which we can always refer because we are constantly confronted with people at different stages of evolution. We're not a master. We don't know exactly what the stage of evolution is, but as we go further and develop our sensitivity and rid ourselves of the distortions of lower ego, we can more and more identify with who they are and see what for them may be the next need and how different zodiacal energies can provide them with what they want and what they need. Then we will really be in a position to help them live more beautifully and more scientifically. And of course, we have to prove it within ourselves first. It's no good running out to save if you haven't saved yourself. So as the Buddha is telling us, the man who overcomes himself, who conquers his own nature, is as one who has conquered 1,000 armies. It's quite a struggle. But once the conquest has occurred, as it has for the masters, at least they have conquered their personality nature and their individual tendencies that might deviate somewhat from the plan. Once these things have occurred, then we are really in a position to help and to save. We're not asking anything for the lower personal self, and we see with intuitive clarity what is really needed? Have we asked ourselves, you know, can we approach others and see with intuitive clarity what is really needed? That is not so easily accomplished. We may see what we think is needed, but is the real next step, the real need, available to us in all clarity? We can practice as we think of other people that we may be in a position to assist, and we have to care more for those needs than we do for the gratifications of our own nature, even if the gratifications are of a relatively high nature. Well, I think we're in a position here to maybe call this particular program to a halt and begin with Esoteric Astrology Adventure 99 after doing some conversion here so this can be made available to you. We can start this process. I realize I am working somewhat in spurts. You know, they seem to come every few months when the desk clears, maybe when there's not a conference and there's not excessive responsibility in other ways for the Federation and program planning and so forth. I'm trying to get this commentary on this book to you. I guess about half of the book has now been done, maybe a little more than half. And most of us are most familiar with the first part of the book that deals with the signs of the zodiac in the clockwise manner and all of their interrelations. But the second part of the book, just like the second part of the rays and initiations, is very occult, very practical at the same time. It deals with high matters. So once in a little while that the first part of the book up to page 404 is completed, we have two more signs really. We have Gemini and Taurus to complete after completing this one in Cancer. Then it will be possible to go on and study the science of triangles and to study the astrology of various nations, perhaps in association with the destiny of the nations. Another amazing book when trying to think of group incarnation and to think of the effective contribution of the different national souls. Then we can begin to think also in terms of the will and how it expresses itself through, not only through different rays, but through different signs of the zodiac. There's much yet to cover. All we can do at this stage of our evolution is to think as deeply as possible so we begin to assimilate the vision that the Tibetan has given us. We can't make everything practical at once. Would that we could. But we're still in the learning phase here. We may be entering the Hall of Wisdom, but with respect to these high things, we're very much in the Hall of Learning. And just as the magician preparing to be the practical magician must know something academically about the white magical process, so we preparing to be true esoteric astrologers, which may not really exist yet among such as ourselves, we have to study academically these relationships, and then when opportunities in life present themselves, we can draw from what we have learned and apply what we think we know, what we appear to know, in a way that is congruent with what Master DK has presented. He has given so very much. As he said, more than you can ever assimilate. But we have to learn how to think about what he has given. It's not enough just to absorb it. one has to correlate it. And he told us earlier in the book how much correlational work remained to be done. Because when we correlate in an accurate manner, light flashes forth between the items correlated. A new understanding of relationship occurs, and that understanding is a flashing forth of light. And before long, the entire field to be correlated is filled with such flashing lights, and there is a great unification in light of the entire field. And then we're really ready for the intuition. We can instantly go anywhere within that field and find out how any particular factor can be enhanced, utilized, subdued, reinforced. We have to master the field. This requires some fifth ray work at first, some fourth ray work eventually, and some second ray work to render the field whole in terms of inclusive reason. Knowing the before and the behind and that which follows intuitively. Knowing all these relations not through the reasoning power, which it must at first be used, but immediately and intuitively through direct knowledge. We are working through that, and if we laboriously are using the mind to establish an understanding of relations, it will not forever be that way. Once the relations are understood, their value, their applicability will instantaneously flash forth, and we will use that type of relational understanding to create improved conditions here among the human beings whose lives we touch and within kingdoms whose lives we touch. So there are some that are working very closely with the elevation of the animal kingdom or with the plant kingdom or even the mineral kingdom. That is their particular dharma. In general, our task, however, is to improve the lot of humanity within its present conditions. And then once that is done to a degree, then the improvement of the kingdoms will follow. And man will be a true macrocosm for the lower kingdoms, which is not yet quite the case, though promising examples can be seen. All right, so then a little later, we'll begin with number 99, and we will see when that will be and how far we will take it. We have another 70 pages to go in the first section, so before long we should be there. And then we will have put under our belt a vast study. But as I said, it's not that we must know everything. We must know how we can know. We must have the right kind of thinking process, which will lead to revelation. And hopefully some of that is being demonstrated as through the use of Mercury, unsuspected relations are revealed. So many more, of course, are escaping me in the moment. Either I don't know them or have no time to reveal them, but many connections which may not have been thought about before perhaps find their place in these commentaries. So we will end our work now. I see my wife and her grandchildren out there waving a branch at me. I guess it's time. So we will say goodbye for the moment and move on to 99.